The Stairway, Week 17. Hope you didn't cancel those Super Bowl plans, everybody, because guess what? We're right back in it. Big victory this week against the Bungles. A big blowout win at that. This is Mr. Just Right with you, as usual. With me, as always, Bad News B-Rye. What's up, man?
Hey, Mikey. How's it going, man?
Very, very good. Very, very good. And a little holiday surprise with, is this the first ever guest, permanent fixture? I'm not quite sure yet. We'll see how this goes with him. See how he lives up to the hype. We got a third cast member with us today. Doomsday Danny. What's up, Doomsday?
Not much. I didn't know there was hype. That's a lot of pressure.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. You come highly, highly recommended. Highly recommended. So Doomsday and Bad News is they're a tag team. You know, we like to talk wrestling here in the living room quite a bit. These guys are a tag team. They're brothers of sorts. They're heels. They're big heels. One thing they have in common, other than being just badass, mean badasses, is they love the Steelers. Of course we know Bad News loves the Steelers, but Doomsday Danny might love the Steelers even more. So Doomsday, why don't you give us your origin story real quick so the fans can just get used to where you're coming from. When did you start watching the Steelers? Why do you like the Steelers? Is it because of their colors? Is it because they won so many Super Bowls in the 70s? How old are you? How long does your knowledge go back? I mean, what are we looking at here, Doomsday?
I am 51. I was born in 72. My first memories are around 78, 79. I distinctly remember the third Super Bowl against the Cowboys and the fourth Steelers Super Bowl against the Rams. Those are my earliest memories. And then I remember the bad years of the 80s, towards the end of the Newell era, the Bubby Brister era, Mark Malone era, and then kind of going into the Cowher era. And that's when I kind of became a huge football fan again. Steelers started looking good. I think it was around 93. So, yeah, really got into football again then. And really have been a huge fan ever since. Love the Steelers because of the organization, the Rooneys, what they represent. And hopefully that'll continue for a long time.
Well, it's good to know. So you go back a little bit further than Bad News and I. So Bad News,
a little bit.
Little does everyone know, but Bad News and I actually share the same birthday. But he's a year older than me. We've known each other since kindergarten. So going on what, Bad News, 30 some odd years now. Been
about
really good friends.
Years, yeah.
And you know, so we come from the same time frame basically, but you go back even further, so I think it's important for everyone to understand what perspectives we have here on the Stairway. So you go back, you've seen the real bad times, you've seen the 80s.
Oh, yeah.
Like you said, and we, Bad News and I, really don't have memories of that. I don't anyways. Bad News, you might.
You don't want them.
No. And for a while there, and it still might be, honestly, it kind of feels like this year was kind of slipping into that doom and gloom. You know, we don't have the franchise quarterback, or we think we don't. But as soon as we kind of throw in a towel, and I feel like it's happened two or three times this year, they pull us right back in, right, with a big win. And they did that this week against Cincinnati. God, guys, I don't have any statistics in front of me, but it feels like this was our first real blowout win, 34-11 blowout, more than 20 points. In quite a long time. I don't know if either of you know when the last time.
I was wondering that myself.
Yeah.
Did not do the research on it. I think it's been 2-3 years at least.
Yeah, it's been at least 2 years from what I've heard.
So the real question is can we do this kind of offensive explosion, have this type of output against a team other than the Bengals, who was the team that was the first game we had the combo of Sullivan and Faulkner, right? after the Canada firing, we got the 400 yards and whatnot against the Bengals the last time, and we did it again here, right out the gate. Huge play to George Pickens. We're off and running. We didn't look back. So, you know, I think B-Rye, you and I both picked the Steelers to lose this game against the Bengals, and on brand, completely on brand for the Steelers this year, they pull out a win. I think I might have picked one game all season correctly with this team just because we don't know what we're getting on a week-to-week basis. Danny, since this is your first time on the show this year, can you just kind of give us a Cliff Notes version of what your thoughts on the season thus far has been, just so we can all try to align here, because the fans know what B-Rye and I think. What's your perspective on this season so far? Where are you at mentally heading into these last two games?
I'm still trying to figure it out myself, quite honestly. I don't see us going anywhere if we make the playoffs. Probably lost in the first round or maybe a one and done. But I've been wrong many times this year about this team. Right off the bat, I was pretty optimistic. I thought we were going to be in for maybe an 11-6 type season. And yeah, it hasn't gone that way. I thought Kenny looked fantastic in preseason and second half of last year. I thought that would carry over. I thought we improved the offensive line a great deal, the linebacker position a great deal, and it's been chaotic. And I'm still trying to figure it out myself. A lot of injuries, really testing linebacker and safety. What are we? I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think we all have the same thoughts. You know, it's, I don't know, for me, it kind of feels like maybe winning isn't the best thing for this team right now. And I'm sure a lot of Steelers fans feel the same way. I mean, our playoff chances at this point are still so slim. We need a ton of help and win out. Is winning games really the best thing for this team? Is keeping the over 500 streak the best thing for this team right now? Keeping that illusion alive? I don't know. It's just a weird time in Steelers history. I think I predicted 10-7 coming into the year, which we all would have been happy with. We're not going to get there, but we all had high hopes, and the inconsistency has really been the story of the year. So we're recording this on, what is it, guys? Thursday the 28th right now?
Yep.
So we got a big game coming up against Seattle this weekend. Lenny, of course, my other co-host on our NFL Picks show, is a big Seahawks fan, and I feel like we both feel the same way about both of our teams, the Seahawks and the Steelers, just wildly inconsistent, underperforming in a lot of areas, and it's going to be an interesting matchup. But before we get to the Seahawks, we do have to recap our last game here against the Bengals. We have some interesting storylines to dive into. So we're in between Christmas and New Year's. You know, I don't know, do you guys remember Val Venus at all from the WWF? Val Venus? He had the towel. He had the towel. He would have the towel, and he was like a porn star, was his gimmick. And he would always say, "Hello, ladies." And Val Venus had an infamous line that says, "This leg is Christmas. This leg is New Year's. Why don't you come and visit me between the holidays?" All right. So that's where we're at right now. We're between the holidays. New Year's is coming up, and Christmas is gone.
I'll use that one.
Thank God Christmas is over. That's what I feel like nowadays. I used to be sad when Christmas is over, and now I'm like, thank God it's over. And the Steelers, guys, gave us probably the biggest gift of the year, just a slap happy win against the division rival to take them above 500 to 8-7. So let's kick it off. Let's get into the box score, shall we? Of course, the biggest storyline here that's going to continue into this week is Mason Rudolph, 17 for 27, two touchdowns, no interceptions, He only was sacked one time, a quarterback rating of 124. A couple of big passes. Of course, the first pass of the game is a big touchdown. George Pickens, big third down throw. Pickens almost had 200 yards. Guys, do we have a quarterback controversy? B-Rye, you give me your side first. Danny, then you can follow up after Bad News gives his thoughts here. Do we have a quarterback controversy in Pittsburgh?
I think at least short term we do. You know, you've seen a lot of backup quarterbacks this year due to the crazy amount of injuries we've seen at quarterback. So we've seen a lot of backups come in, and some of them have looked good, and people start to wonder, is this guy for real? Is this guy for real? You got your Tommy DeVito's, you got your Brownings, you got a lot of guys. So it's really hard to tell. I think the definition of a good backup quarterback is someone who can come in and win you a game or two. Is that what Rudolph's doing? Or is this something that's maybe a little bit more maintainable? Is this something he can do on a week-to-week basis? We haven't seen him play a game in, I think, about 2 years. Danny and I were talking about this on the phone yesterday. Mason, when he came into the league, kind of got the short end of the stick. He, you know, he was drafted in third round, put up crazy college football numbers. He's a big guy. He's got a talented arm, strong arm. And he comes into the league. They don't have a quarterback coach. Ben is he's not happy that they draft a receiver. He wanted them to give him a weapon or a line, understandable in some ways. But, you know, that's Ben being Ben. He's not the most professional when it comes to things like that. So he didn't help Mason move along. He didn't have a QB coach. He I want to say he was the third quarterback that year. So during the season, he wasn't getting those weekly reps that you want a rookie to get to get a little bit better. So he did show some things in some games, and then he showed some bad things. I think he's probably improved as a quarterback over the last couple of years, improving his football IQ. I think he at this point in time is maybe our best quarterback, a guy most capable of winning games. Whether he can be a good starter in the league, I still have my doubts on that. But so far, he's looking good, and maybe we can win these next couple of games with him.
Yeah, I really want to see what he can do this week. I'm not sure either if he is just a little bit of a flash, and then once teams get some film on him, they can figure him out. Or if he has more than that. I remember when he was drafted, he fit the Bill Parcells criteria for quarterbacks that he looked for, which was based largely on experience and some other metrics. The only extended playing time he's ever really had was as a rookie without a great team around him, without a good running game. And he really performed admirably. So, yeah, I'm curious to see what he can do. Now, if he fails, then I think that eliminates the quarterback controversy in terms of, you know, him being a potential starting quarterback. If he plays great, well, then it's going to get juicy. You know, that's really where the question lies. But I do feel like going into next year, I don't see Trubisky as part of this. Even though you don't really save much money, you save some next year. And I think if Mason performs admirably, I think you'd like to have him back as a number two next year. That's where I'm at with it.
That's kind of what I agree with too, Dan. I think Mitch is done. Here he should be done in Pittsburgh, even though we just signed him to that extension. I think we need to cut bait. I think he had his chance and just didn't show it. I'm not quite sure. It's Thursday, so practice reports might be coming out here as we speak. If you guys happen to catch that while we're talking here, let me know. I just read on Steelers Depot that some members of the organization are saying it looks like Kenny might be pushing to play, which kind of matches up with that 4-week timeline that we had from him. He had this surgery previously, and other players have had it. So 4 weeks is right about the time. Probably, ideally, you sit him another week. But for someone in Kenny's position who just watched Mason put up that performance, you're starting to sweat about losing your job, perhaps, if you don't play. So he's probably thinking it's in his best interest to get back out there sooner than later. It's kind of a catch-22, I think, guys, because if Mason goes out there and lights up the Seahawks again, how do we go forward there? Do you anoint him the starter for the Ravens game? Do you go right back to Kenny? Do you then have a situation where you're looking at both guys in the offseason as potential starters? And the old saying goes, you have two quarterbacks, you have none, right? And maybe that is the worst thing for the franchise is, okay, now we got two guys who can maybe play. Of course, our high draft pick who's won some games. You got Rudolph who has shown some flashes at the end of the year. Maybe we're just going to let them battle it out in camp, right? Or are these the two guys we want battling it out in camp? So a lot is on the line here these next 2 weeks. Do you agree with that, guys, that we're kind of in a catch-22 situation here? And really, the Seahawks game and the Ravens game, I think, are going to be huge pieces of evidence we need going into this offseason, because we lost the whole month of Kenny here with the new coordinators. We still don't know what we have. We still don't know what we have with him, right, at this point?
Yeah, I agree. I think you have to ride the hot hand right now. You have to give Mason a chance because we still are in the hunt.
Yeah.
And we still need to learn a little bit more about him and what he can be heading into next year. Is he a good backup? Is he someone who can compete for that number one job? I think that's going to be very telling here. Now, if he comes out and he throws two or three picks in the first half, maybe you jump to Kenny right away, and then you start to learn a little bit more about Kenny with these last two games. But the thing is, if he comes out and he plays a pretty good game or even a great game, and for some reason they go to Kenny in that last game, if Kenny has a great game that last game, then that's a good sign, right? But if he has a bad game, then, you know, the questions are, is he 100% healthy? Is he rusty because he hasn't played in three or four games? So, like, do you really learn anything there? I'm not quite sure. So I think the key thing is ride it out with the hot hand right now and then just, you know, figure it out as time goes by.
Yeah, I think normally with where we pick kind of in the middle of the draft, you wouldn't have great quarterback options to even consider. It's early in the process, but from what I'm seeing so far, there actually may be five quarterbacks going in the top 15, 20 picks. So it could be in play, and it would be good to have a clearer vision of what we have and don't have going into that. and right now, we don't. I did get a kick out of Mason was asked if he learned anything sitting on the sideline and watching, and his answer was no.
That was Kenny, right? I just read the same thing on the Depot, I think, right? Kenny said that?
Yes, I'm sorry, Kenny.
Yeah,
yes.
That was an interesting comment that kind of raised my eyebrows.
No elaboration.
Yeah. which is kind of surprising coming from Kenny. He tends to say all the right things most of the time. You know, that was interesting. I just think I agree with everything you guys said. We're just kind of out of runway here. Like you said, Bira, I don't think there's a situation where we come out of this season with a very good idea what we have. And to me, that gives them kind of the excuse to push the can or kick the can down the road to next year and say, okay, we got two guys. Maybe it's Kenny. He was hurt. The Ravens are, you know, unless the Ravens sit some starters, that's going to be a tough game. They just wallop the 49ers, really, and everything is kind of null and void with your AFC North matchups. We could, you know, do anything in those games, but it's hard to look at that game and say any quarterback that we deploy is going to have a outstanding game against the Ravens. We're going to win probably in spite of ourselves if we do win that game. And to me, it just seems like this, with Mason's performance and Kenny's injury, like you said, Danny, they're probably going to pass on any quarterback that they would be in range for. Maybe take one late, cut Mitch, have him battled out in camp next year, and we're going to be in a very similar spot with a quarterback position, hoping one of these two guys rise to the occasion. I don't see them figuring the quarterback situation out this year at all. So it's going to be another year of the same next year. Run it back with Kenny and now Mason, who they might have a little bit more confidence in. I don't know. A lot is going to happen here against Seattle. But nonetheless, hey, you like to see it. Mason came out. He did his job. The fans were chanting his name. They've been chanting his name. And that's a very Pittsburgh thing, like rooting for the backups, wanting the backups to come in. The backup's always better than the starter when the starter's, mediocre or bad. So it was nice to see. The Christmas thing, Rudolph, blah, 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 a good storyline there too. He didn't turn the ball over. He always pushed the ball down the field. That was always his thing coming out of college, right? Deep passes. What was he? Texas Tech? Right?
Oklahoma State.
Yeah. So they run that, air raid type offense there in the Big 12 at the time. And what was he? James Washington.
Oh, James Washington. That was the whole reason.
Yeah. Yeah. So, good to see. Good to see performance, but we'll see if anything else comes of it. We'll see if he gets another shot here. It sounds like if Kenny is available, they're going to go back to him. And I think that's probably the right thing to do. Get another game of evidence under him. You got to figure it out as soon as possible, I think. So nonetheless, so Mason, 290 yards, 2 touchdowns, nothing to complain about. The running backs, guys. Najee Harris, I think, had one of his best, if not his best, performance of the year. And this one coming off a horrible game in the last one. He had 19 carries for 78 yards. That's good for a little over four yards a carry. A lot of bruising-type runs. A lot of Pittsburgh Steeler-type runs, I like to call them. Just hard nose, getting yardage after contact. Jaylen Warren, another disappointing game on the ground for him. He had 8 carries for 24 yards. Calvin Austin had the nice little sweep. B-Rai, they must have heard the stairway from the week before, because we were wondering, where's Calvin? If you're not going to use him at all, why give him a hat on return games or not involve him in plays like this? He scored on what was a little end-around, jet sweep, whatever you want to call it, there, which is exactly how they should be using him and his speed. So he had that carry for 7 yards on a score. And Mason ran twice for 4 yards. Thoughts on the running game here? We'll give it to you first, Doomsday, and then we'll go over to B-Rai for our ball carriers here.
Yeah, a lot of people are concerned with the amount of carries, and I think it can be kind of a game-by-game thing. Ride the hot hand, maybe matchups. I'm fine with the two that we have. In Warren and Najee, in what order and however you split the carries. Sometimes Najee looks a little slow, undecided. Other times he runs with power. I don't know what the difference is, if it's a health thing or not. And at times Jaylen can look explosive. So I think you ride the hot hand, ride the healthy hand between them, and I think that's good. Now, with Najee, do you go fifth-year option? I don't think you do. So you will have to add somebody else to the stable to complement Warren. But for now, I'm okay with those two.
Yeah, I agree. They complement each other well. Najee's the pounder. Warren's the lightning. He gets used a lot in third down situations, the passing game. So I think he couldn't find anything in the running game for whatever reason, but he did have those 5 receptions. So he's a guy that can help move the chains. Najee, it was nice to see him get a nice rebound. He had some terrible runs the previous week, but this week he was seeing the holes better. The holes were bigger, so it was easier just to find them, I would say, against this Bengals defense. Great to see Calvin Austin get involved. I want to see more of it. And I do want to give a big shout out to Jalen for that crushing block he had on that Calvin Austin touchdown. That was incredible. And he also had some really big blitz pickups as well in this game.
Huge. Yeah. Warren, in terms of, you know, fantasy factor, stat lines thing, not his best game. But like you said, B-Ry, that block on Calvin Austin's touchdown was him putting his money where his mouth is when, you know, he was asked about the Pickens' lack of blocking on his run. He said, I would do that for him. And he lit that guy up. I mean, absolutely lit him up. He's one of the best blitz pickup running backs in the league, bar none. I mean, he just dead stop guys on blitzes. I mean, he picks them up. It's a clean pocket. That's one of his best traits. So a lot of his impact comes away from the score sheet, you know. But at the same time, man, his blocks show up on film too. I mean, they pop out during the play. I mean, just what a – he just put that – I can't even remember who it was, but he put that guy on his ass on the Austin touchdown. So great to see there. You know, everything you guys are saying is right. I agree with – I don't think you pick up Najee's option year. So last year, you know, unless he comes back on, you know, signs a different type of deal with us, I think next year you're probably looking at being his last year as a Steeler. And that's fine. You know, I just don't think our running game has really taken over games much this year. We just aren't compiling the type of consistency and statistics that I think we all thought this team was going to be built around the run, you know, and I just don't think it's really taken over a lot of games solidly yet this year. And again, we're not getting 100-yard performances, and that's something I think we can probably do better on next year, and we don't have to spend a first round or a high pick on a running back to get that done. So hopefully another year of this offensive line growing together, and maybe some additions in the offseason will be a lot better for the run game and the team as a whole going forward. Let's move on to our pass catchers, of course, and this one, guys, highlighted by George Pickens. 4 catches, 195 yards, and the 2 scores, obviously, on 6 targets. I'll stop right here on George. Obviously, you love to see it. You know, the little slant route, in route, first pass of the game, took it to the house, getting rid of guys, draped all over him. I tell you what, the one thing I really didn't like, though, is he's immediately given the whole, you know, I can't hear you type thing, criticism. I'm sure he heard it all week about the blocking, so you see a little bit of the diva-ish attitude coming out even after the big play. I don't like seeing that. I just wish the guy would go about his work and let his performance speak for itself. You know, because he's not going to have these games every week, let's be honest. And it's great to see him bounce back like this. It's great to see him get a ball that he can take to the house like that. But, you know, is this an outlier? Is this going to be a common thing going forward? Bad news, we'll start with you. What did you think about this performance from George? Can we expect more of it? Is this a flash in the pan type thing? Overall, what's your thoughts on the whole drama with him the last couple of weeks?
Yeah, I think he also said that he was keeping receipts, referring to the media. He's obviously very immature. It's nice that Tomlin's finally admitting it and that it's a work in progress. Can he improve and become more professional? It's possible. It's really up to him, though. You know, typically when someone shows these kind of red flags, they don't usually develop in that area. So we'll see. I don't see this offense being that explosive on a game-to-game basis. So you're not going to always have huge games from him. It's just not going to happen. He had some big games earlier in the year, maybe not as big as this, but he's had big games earlier in the year. So it's good to see him dominate like this. I've heard on talk shows a lot of, you know, if he can play like this every game, who cares if he can block? I get that, but like I said, I don't expect this every game. So, nonetheless, very good to see. Yeah.
Receivers, can't live with them, can't live without them. Yeah, why is that position so diva-driven? I don't get it. So much more than any other position. It's not even close. But I do think that, he's got obviously some immaturity. I guess you have to live with that, though, at that position, as long as you don't have off-field issues, as long as you're not tied to a huge contract that could be a problem, Antonio Brown. although I get how that happened. You're not going to get that kind of performance every week. But I do think the best way to keep him in line and keep the problems to a minimum is to keep him involved. He wants to catch the football. He wants to make plays. And he has talent, obviously. So I think you try to, it's not going to happen every week, but you try to keep him involved. And I think that's how you take care of that.
Yeah, I agree, Danny. But you know what? Sometimes the game dictates that can't always happen, you know, and that's where you need to see him step up. You look at a guy like Stephon Diggs in Buffalo right now, basically been eliminated from their game plan ever since their new offensive coordinator came over. But he was a guy in the past who would kind of throw a fit if he wasn't getting the ball quite a bit, but he's kind of fell in line so far with them this season. So you hope George can grow out of this, and you hope he can do it while he's still under contract with the team, because again, we're going to come into a situation with him soon where we need to figure out, is this guy really an alpha? Is he the guy we want as our number one or number two even? Is he a guy we want to throw a lot of money at the receiver position here? You know, come end of next year, we're probably going to have a pretty good idea whether that's our plan with him or not. So hopefully we see some more maturity from him, and he can block. He can put guys on their asses. So we want to see that from him on a consistent basis, regardless of how the team is performing at the moment. But good bounce back game for George. Credit to him. You know, he stayed engaged, and really you can argue that big play right off the bat just set the tone for the rest of the game, which is something we really haven't had a lot of this year. It's kind of tone setting early on, just putting our foot on the throat of the opponent.
Yeah, to say the least.
Let's go look at the other guys here. I thought Allen Robinson had a nice little game, guys. He had 4 catches for 36 yards, just doing Allen Robinson business-like professional things. Professional catches, you know, reminds me of like a Jericho Cautry type guy, just going about his business, making big first down catches. Not going to show up in the box score a lot or the highlight reel, but he just does his thing. 4 targets for him. He caught all of them. Jaylen Warren had 5 catches for 30 yards. We want to see more of that, more of the screens. Like we said before, I think last week, more of him and Najee on the field at the same time to throw some teams off. Design plays to get him into space. Deontay Johnson, a quiet game. He had 2 catches for 15 yards. I think they were both on the same drive. Mason did just narrowly miss Deontay on a big bomb there, which would have gone for a touchdown as well, but I think Mason just overthrew him a little bit, which I was okay with because I was going up against Deontay in fantasy football, so that was okay with me at the time. But just narrowly missed another big touchdown there to him. And Mason has a good rapport with Deontay. It seems like he's one of the guys he talks about quite frequently. They've been in the franchise here for a while, probably put in a lot of work together on the second team and whatnot. So expect Deontay to be involved a little bit more if Mason does get to start next week. Darnell Washington, guys, had a catch for 8 yards, a catch that probably only he could make. It was very high up in the air, and he just kind of plucked it down and caught it. He might have got a first down or gotten close to a first down, I think, on that catch. But I thought it was funny that pass was so high up in the air, and only 6'7" Matt Washington probably could have pulled that one down. He did. So he's been good for a catch a game every other game here. That seems to be his story this year. Miles Boykin got involved with a 6-yarder. And Calvin Austin didn't catch anything on 2 targets. Any other thoughts on the pass catchers here? We'll start with Doomsday and then B-Rye.
Yeah, I think when you look at the stats on the season, those auxiliary weapons, the numbers are so disappointing. You know, the tight ends, the numbers 3 and 4 receivers, even Deontay as a 2 is not putting up the numbers. And the thing is, when you have an ineffective offense and you're running 50 plays a game, it's just not enough plays for those auxiliary players to get their numbers and to be effective. So a game like this, you'll start to see that. You know, you'll see some extra catches from the backs, from the tight ends, from a guy like Allen Robinson. And that's good to see, because that is what their role is. As I looked at the stats earlier today, I seen Pickens had topped 1,000 yards. You look at the rest of them, very disappointing numbers. So you get a game like this, those start to come up a little bit.
Yeah, that's a great point. I think we talked about that on a recent episode, where felt like you can't blame the receivers. It's really a lot of just dysfunction on offense, not enough opportunities. But yeah, I echo what you guys said. Good to see Calvin at least get some targets. I'd like to see him connect on some of those for the deep ball. Mason threw a couple really good deep balls, but there were also a couple with him and then with Deontay that is just off on. So maybe a little bit more time playing together, maybe against the Seahawks, we'll see some big connections with those guys and getting them a little bit more involved as well. A-Rob did a good job moving the chains. I felt like we had some really big, like third and sixes, just getting enough yardage to keep the chains moving. So it was good to see, and I think Mason was a big part of orchestrating all that.
100%. And the thing here, I was kind of surprised, no Freiermuth at all in this game, which was kind of surprising. But they were efficient. You know, I'd rather see long bombs down the field than dink and dunk sometimes. And you know what? There's multiple ways to skin a cat there. And our game plan in this one was huck it and chuck it. And that got it done. B-Rye, me and you were texting on that. What was it, a 3rd and 1? Bomb they had to Pickens, and we kind of said that reminds us of the Randy Fichtner era, where they were getting 3rd and short and just chuck it down the field for a low percentage play, and a lot of times it did not work, and it seemed like maybe they were just going for the pass interference and then they would punt it instead of just, you know, scheming up a short yardage play, a high percentage short yardage play, just to move the sticks. It worked in this one, though, to Pickens, and it just seems like if he gets one-on-one, he's so automatic in bringing those balls down. That's really his best trait, is a lot of those low percentage throws become more high percentage if you can get him in man coverage there. Anything else, guys, on the offensive side of the ball before we move on, B-Rye?
No, nothing here.
Doomsday.
Yeah, just one point to what you were saying, Mike. On film, you want those big plays. You want the defense to have to respect that. That opens up the underneath. That opens up the running game. And so when you're watching the game and you see us go for it on 3rd and 1 and fail, disappointing. I know it is. And it's not always the best in-game decision to go for it, but you want some of those on the film for future opponents. So that's good to see.
Good point.
Absolutely. Yeah. The big plays have just been sorely missing this year. So it's good to get some of those under our belt. And I think we have a defense here this week that can be had. And we'll talk more about that in a little bit. So let's move on to the defensive side of the ball, shall we? Our boy, B-Rye, Mykal Walker, we're going to see more and more of him. He led the team with 8 tackles, 5 solo. He did have 1 for a loss. Let's talk about the middle linebackers here real quick. Miles Jack, I thought, had a nice game in relief. He had a tackle for a loss. He almost had an interception. He had a sack. He had a couple hits on the quarterback. And this was mostly, I believe, in relief for Landon Roberts, who was injured in this one, who also had 5 solo tackles. It looks like we're thinking maybe a torn pec. I haven't seen the injury report, but I assume Landon Roberts is out. But I thought Miles Jack did a nice job stepping in there at the end of the game. What do you think, B-Rai?
Yeah, yeah. The Shazier curse continues here. E-Rob, he was the last man standing and has that pec injury. He did not practice. So I'm hoping, since he hasn't been like rolled down, or, you know, we haven't heard anything super negative, so hopefully it's not a torn pec, fingers crossed there. But Miles Jack, yeah, it looks like he's, I'm guessing his conditioning is getting much closer. I think I heard something after the game that he was, didn't expect to play that much, but he did a great job filling in, and he's healthier this year than he was last year. So maybe we can have him close out the year as a strong starter. Hopefully we get E-Rob back next week even. But I do think Michael Walker played better. He's a younger guy. He's, you know, getting used to our defense. We've been really hard on him because he's been pretty bad this year. But this game he did much better. He his tackling was better. He was covering up gaps better in the run game. He did get twisted around in coverage on that Higgins 80-yard touchdown catch. That looked pretty bad, but hopefully he can keep getting better, because right now we need him.
Yeah, I think the key with Miles Jack is fresh legs. You know, he's comfortable in the system. And the last few years of his career with that degenerative knee condition or whatever that was from college with the drop foot, he couldn't run last year. And I think having some time off, this game, he looked fresher for sure. So, yeah, conditioning will come into play here, and we'll see how he handles that. Another point I want to make is, I think, considering all the injuries we've had at linebacker this year, I got to give some props to the coaching. There's not many areas of the team that, you know, I think the coaching deserves much credit. But I think linebacker is one spot. Despite all these injuries, we've held up pretty well. I think it's the best play we've had from the position probably in 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
So.
And 4 different play callers there too, right? Because didn't Miles get the green dot whenever Alanda went out? So we've had Holcomb, Quan, Alanda, all 3 of the new guys, and now Jack all had play calling duties at some point in the year, and you know, we're down to our 4th play caller now. So hopefully we can get a Landon back. It didn't look promising during the game, but we'll see. Eric Rowe, guys, newcomer to the team, had 7 tackles, 3 solo, and a pass defense. I thought he had a nice little game here. What do you think, Doomsday?
Yeah, he did. He did. And that's another area that just we've been decimated with injuries at. And he has a little bit of a history. I believe he was not a high draft pick, but a little bit higher, kind of some cornerback/safety traits. He's been around the league a little bit. I know he spent some time with the Patriots. That might have even been who drafted him. But yeah, he looked good, and it was much needed. And Patrick Peterson seems to be, you know, playing pretty solid there, and maybe that's a consideration moving on, is Peterson at safety.
Yeah. I agree. And I think that's one thing Omar Khan does well, and I thought the Patriots always did well as an organization. They had a need mid-season, preseason. They went out and got guys with pedigree, whether it be a high draft pedigree, high skill guys at one point in their career, kind of on the fly reclamation projects And it seems like Khan has a similar philosophy. He goes out and gets guys who at one point in their career played very well, or were high draft picks and just high skill guys. And he did it again with Rowe. And as we were talking here, I just saw they brought in Jalen Smith, which is another example of that. And I thought Pat Pete did a great job at safety, guys. And we talked about that earlier in the year. Maybe that would be a possibility, him playing more safety. And he's kind of forced into that role now. But interesting to see. Nonetheless, I did think he had a good game. Levy Wallace had 5 tackles. He had 1 defensed. Shandon Sullivan, he does play for us still, B-Rye. 3 tackles, 3 solo. He did have a pass breakup and a tackle for loss. So a nice game from Shandon there. TJ Watt, absolute menace in this one, guys. He had 3 tackles. He had a sack. He had 4 hits on the quarterback. Just a vintage TJ Watt game. Same for Highsmith. Just a lot of pressure on the quarterback. Great game out of those guys. They both picked up the sack coming out of it. Nick Herbig, he had 3 tackles, 2 solo. Miles Killebrew, 3 tackles, 1 solo. Mark Robinson had a nice play in this one. 2 tackles for him. Joey Porter Jr., he had the penalty as well, I think, but he did have a pass breakup. 2 tackles, I think. You know, T. Higgins had a big stat line, but they played a lot of zone in this one. So even though he was on T, I think you were referencing that on the Michael Walker kind of got turned around in coverage there. It was a pass off from Joey Porter, and T got loose on that one. But overall, I think Porter continues to improve, and I'm very anxious to see what he turns into. Joey Porter also had another nice tackle in this one, so he is cleaning up his tackling, which we absolutely need to see. It was a knock on him. The penalties were also a knock on him coming out. Very handsy guy. A lot of guys saying he needs to change the color of his gloves, maybe, to be a little bit more discreet. But he is, I believe, the most penalized cornerback in the league, despite not having played for the first several weeks of the season.
And the tackling coming out of college is, you know, being an issue is quite understandable. Nobody threw at him. So he had years of not having to make a tackle. And that is probably the hardest thing to replicate in practice, is tackling. But he is improving, so that's good to see.
Yeah, and he's a long, kind of lanky type guy, you know, not really built like his dad was, but maybe Joey Sr. can teach him a few tips in the offseason with the tackling. But you gotta love the arc. You gotta love the arc here for Joey Porter, Keanu Benton specifically. I think with the way that rookie class is shaping up, and Herbig as well, we just mentioned him. He hasn't gotten a lot of plays, but he's made a lot of splash plays on film. When he has had chances this year, he seems super engaged with the rest of the team. I'm anxious to see more Nick Herbig for sure.
And I tell you what, I don't recall the last time I was as happy with the whole edge rusher unit as this one.
Yeah.
I mean, Marcus Golden could start on some teams.
Yeah.
And we have him. Nick Herbig would probably be getting 30, 40 snaps on other teams. We have him. TJ Watt, MVP? I think so. And Highsmith with Watt, probably the best tandem in football. So the superlatives at that position, just, you know, where do you stop?
Yeah. And, you know, I think kind of knock on wood, thankfully, we haven't had to see a lot of Herbig or Golden this year because we've been healthy at the position mostly. So, you know, that's a good thing. Interesting you say MVP candidate, Danny. Well, I don't think that's going to happen. I do think this team would be well below 500 at this point if it wasn't for TJ Watt. I do think TJ is going to get penalized for just kind of the mediocre performance of our team as a whole. And of course, you know, we're going to have to wonder about defensive player of the year. Well, I think he should be right at the top. I do think he's going to get penalized for the team as a whole, the team play as a whole. He's a full sack ahead of Trey Hendrickson, who was banged up in this one for the Bengals for a little bit. So he does have sole possession first place in the sack race. But we would be a much different team. We wouldn't even be sniffing the playoffs, I think, if it weren't for TJ. Do you agree with that, B-Rye?
Yeah, absolutely. We've seen how the team looks without him, what our record is, and it's night and day from when we have him in the lineup. So we would be a below 500 team without TJ.
Despite that great depth, yeah, you don't want to test it too much because then everything starts to go out of whack. And so, yeah, we've been fortunate to have the health we have.
Yeah, 100% agree. So it seems like Lamar is probably the leader in the clubhouse right now after beating up on the Niners and Purdy kind of having a crap game for them. But TJ, when it comes to the definition, you know, most valuable player to your team, I mean, this team would be a lot worse without TJ. We wouldn't even be near the playoff hunt right now if it weren't for him. Where did I leave off at? Pat Pete, we talked about him a little bit. He had two tackles. He, of course, had the interception as well. Rowe also had an interception in this one. And Highsmith as well, so we had three interceptions there. Marcus Golden had a couple tackles, one solo. Larry O had a nice tackle, I believe, in this one. His only solo tackle of the game. Highsmith, lots of pressure. He only had one solo tackle. Armon Watts, Miles Boykin, Elijah Riley all had one tackle. Loudermilk did have a hit on the quarterback, but no tackles as well. Any other thoughts on the defensive performance here? We'll start with Doomsday Danny.
No, I think we summed it up pretty well. Just, you know, given the status of the linebackers and the safeties, for them to step up and do what they did, I think allowed that kind of a win. You know what you're getting from Watt and Highsmith, and the line's been pretty solid most of the year. You get Joey Porter locking down number one receiver. So to me, the key is just linebacker and safety, which could easily be a major problem on the team, and it's held steady.
Yeah, I agree. I thought there were a couple games there where teams were picking on those weaknesses and those guys that haven't been playing together. So this was a really big thing to see them communicating better and playing as a unit. And you got some of those guys getting used to our system, getting a little more experience because they're younger. So despite all the injuries there, they're playing together better, and we're going to need them to operate like that against the Seahawks.
Yeah, the Porter addition has me super excited. If we're able to control a team's number one receiver, it feels like that kind of opens up our options across the defense. And, you know, all this being said, I think kind of a lost year for Minka between the broken hand and now the knee injury. Just did not see the impact from him this year as we would hope. I don't think we're writing him off as a player necessarily, but just what you expect from Minka on a year-to-year basis, we definitely did not get a chance to see that this year with his injuries and whatnot. Special teams guys, Boswell had another perfect day. He kicked two field goals, including a 50-yarder, and he also was perfect on extra points. Presley Harvin, B-Rye, you really got to defend your boy here. He's starting to really falter again down the stretch after a couple solid games in the middle of the year. He only averaged 38.8 yards on five punts. So, I mean, at this point, it's whatever. I don't think, you know, this team is going to come down to punting, but when field position matters as much as it does to a team like the Steelers, I just need to see more consistency out of that position, especially looking at some of the punting performances across the league. Just feels like there's much more juice that can be had from the squeeze there at the punter position on a team that really needs that as honestly a weapon.
Yeah, I'm thinking about taking my jersey onto Goodwill and just dropping it off.
Just dropping it off at the store.
Yep, get a Brad Wing jersey, you know, and just pine for him to get re-signed in the offseason.
Yeah, I don't
know. It's bad.
Yeah.
It's bad.
They're high. They're high punts. They just don't go very far. You know, I don't know what it is. But
yeah, you see that he has the leg, but the consistency is just, well, the inconsistency is just maddening. And if he hasn't got it at this point, will he? I doubt it.
Yeah, you saw it in the Chiefs Raiders game. Tommy Townsend is a fantastic punter, but one bad punt can really screw you in terms of the game flow at the wrong time. And it seems like Harvin is good for one bad punt every game. And then distance wise, he's just not very good at all. He can kick it really high in the air, but just not very far for some reason. I don't know what it is, but we definitely can have more for there. I think his time with the Steelers should be about up. All right, here. That was the Bengals game last week. Again, a 34-11 victory, our second win over the Bengals this season, guys. Even though it was with a backup quarterback, it was nice to kind of make Jake Browning, who was a little bit hot coming in, it was nice to make him look a little bit more like a backup. And any final thoughts on this one, Doomsday? We'll start with you.
No, not really. I think we summed it up pretty well. I am going to have to go back and look and see, you know, when was the last time we dominated a game like this? And as a fan, we're so used to just every single week either being bad or coming down to the crunch time. And so paranoia kind of sets in as a fan. You're watching the game thinking, okay, when's this going to go wrong? And it never really did.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I was waiting for the shoe to drop there too. I think B-Rye texted me right before the end of the second quarter, and I told him it was still too early to start celebrating, which is typically a pretty safe bet that you got two quarters of football left to play with this team. But they saw it through to the end. B-Rye, any final thoughts on this one?
No, it was a nice Christmas present there, finally. Just being able to relax and enjoy a nice win. I thought the coaching was good, execution was good. Tomlin, he actually had, I think, two challenges that went his way, so that's pretty rare. Overall, just a good team effort. Hopefully they can continue that and just, you know, finish out the year strong.
Yep, exactly. So nice stress-free game during a time of year when we could all use less stress, I think, honestly. So it was good to see. So that brings us to the Seahawks, guys. And B-Rye, do you know where we're at with injuries heading into this one?
Yeah, our list is actually pretty short here. As of the Wednesday report, Kenny has the ankle. He was limited. It's going to be interesting to see if he's on the active roster Sunday, maybe in a backup role. So we have that. We have Trenton Thompson with the neck. He was limited. I think he's probably still questionable at this point, but there is a chance that he'll be playing. Najee was held out with the knee, but I expect him to play. That's been kind of an ongoing issue he's been dealing with. Minka has the knee, didn't practice. I don't expect to see him this week, maybe the following week. Landon Roberts has the pec, did not practice. I don't think we'll see him this weekend. And then Isaac Seumalo, he has the shoulder injury, didn't practice, but that's been happening every week, and then he's been playing. So I expect to see him Sunday as well.
So that brings us to the whiny, crying Seahawks, who we've been hearing about since Super Bowl 40, guys. They just won't shut up. They hate the Steelers because of that game, the refs, Big Ben, the bus. They ran all over them in a sloppy Super Bowl victory, and we haven't stopped hearing about it since then. Last time we saw him was 2021 at home, where I believe it was an overtime game, right? We sacked Geno Smith for a fumble at the end. I think TJ Watt got to him, might have hurt him in that one. Yeah, it was a 23-20 win in overtime at Heinz Field. And honestly, this team, it just makes me sick. A lot of it is because of Len, who I podcast with on the other side of the Living Room Champs, just honestly really hating the Steelers and Steelers fans for no good reason. It just makes me sick to hear it. They just really don't like people from Pittsburgh liking their hometown team, as terrible as that is. They don't shut up about it. So for that reason, I'm taking the Steelers in this one in a bounce back, guys, because one thing you will hear Len say is their defense is absolute trash. And I agree with that. They have some nice young players over there. Tariq Woolen or Reek Woolen, whatever he goes by now. Boye Mafe is not bad. But they get ran on quite a bit. They can give up some pass yards. So I'm feeling pretty confident about the offense maybe continuing to take a step forward here. And I'm really confident in us getting to Geno Smith quite a bit in this one. And I believe Geno is in line to start for them again. And I'm really confident in us getting home against him. You know, it's going to be a hostile environment there in Seattle. It's going to be a challenge for the offensive whole to stay on schedule, to not have the stupid penalties, the delays of games, the false starts, all that, that, you know, all that noise in Seattle can bring. But as a whole, I think we match up well against this Seattle team. And I'm going to predict a 23-20 Steelers win on the road in this one. But Doomsday, why don't you give me your thoughts on this one, any matchups you're looking forward to, and then give me your prediction.
Yeah, I think the key to this game definitely is to not let the crowd take over. So you need to come out and establish some drives on offense, get the crowd out of it. If you can do that, then I think you are going to get a win. But I think that's the key. As far as a prediction goes, I'd say about 28-17. And as far as matchups, their right side of their offensive line is not very good. So I'd like to take advantage of that. They use a lot of three receiver sets. They have a very good three receiver sets, but they also mix that with a lot of tight ends. So you'll see different looks from the offense, and we'll see how we match up with that. They're not the kind of offense where you take away one receiver with Joey Porter and then you're good to go. They do have a lot of weapons. But the key to the game overall, is establish some drives early on, take the crowd out of it, and I think we'll be okay.
Bad news. What's your thoughts on this one? What matchups are you looking forward to? What's your prediction?
So the keys to the game, obviously that 12th man is a big factor. Playing in Seattle's, it's tough. I don't feel like they're a great team. I think these teams are very, very much evenly matched. Looking at the Seattle injury report too, they're really banged up right now. They have a lot of guys that are, not practicing. Some of it's resting, some of it's practicing in limited fashion. They're really banged up, but that home field advantage is going to be a big challenge. I think the keys of the game are getting to Geno, getting to him. He's been banged up lately. I don't see him on the injury report, but he is banged up. He has been for weeks now. So you got to get to him quickly. You got to respect their passing game. So you're probably going to want to play a lot of zone to make sure they're kept in front of you. If you're going to match JPJ on someone, I'd put him up against Metcalf. He's been the more explosive guy lately. So you got to keep them in front of you. I think the biggest challenge here is going to be Jackson Smith and Jigba, the rookie who's been coming on lately. He has a tendency to get open. I could see him exposing some of those coverage weaknesses at the middle of the field with linebacker and safety. So that's going to be a challenge on the offensive side of the ball. I think we can move the ball on them. I think we can make some plays. I think we should continue to use the passing game to open up the running game. The question, though, is Mason going to be able to handle this in a hostile environment? We've seen some, the Cleveland game comes to mind, hostile environment. Things kind of went wrong. So it's going to be a close game, but I'm going to have to give the edge to Seattle. I think they're going to win it. I think the 12th man is going to be the biggest difference here. And I'm going to pick them to win 30-23.
Very interesting. And you mentioned it, B-Rye, the wide receivers and the corners for the Steelers is what I'm looking forward to. Metcalf has been coming on as of late, and it's going to be an interesting matchup with a big guy like him, and you would think we're going to put Porter on him. So I do look for them to maybe dink and dunk, get the ball out quick to your Lockett's and your Jackson Smith and Jigbas. Noah Fant might be banged up for them, but still they got Parkinson, they got Disley. Look for them to get the tight ends involved. That's one thing I thought the Bengals were going to pick us off a little bit more with their tight ends sample, who did get some plays, but Tanner Hudson was pretty much a non-factor. But the Seahawks love using all those tight ends. So look for them to get involved, but I do expect big gains from both Lockett and Smith and Jigba if Porter can lock down. I'm sorry, my dogs, if you can hear them, they're going nuts. The UPS driver must be here. I'm going to stick though with this. That's interesting though. We got a little dissension here. Normally we agree. So it's going to be interesting to see here if the Steelers can pull this one out against the Seahawks in Seattle. From an historical perspective, guys, just looking at the all-time series, it's tied 10-10, and that includes Super Bowl 40. So whoever wins this one will take the lead in the all-time series. So a little something at stake here. I think the coaching matchup is something we got to look out for. You'll hear Len oftentimes say, and I fully agree, that, you know, Pete Carroll's just a white Mike Tomlin. And it is very similar. They're both kind of players, coaches, very culture-like guys. Both really questionable at challenging and clock management at times. So we'll see which one prevails on the coaching side. It's going to be an interesting matchup for the coaches, though. Which one is able to manage the clock better? Which one is able to pull off maybe a key challenge? So that's something I'm definitely looking forward to. But other than breaking the all-time series tie at 10-10, we always also talk about the kind of pipeline of former Steelers / Seahawks. So Doomsday Danny, you're our new historical guru here on the stairway. Can you name some players off the top of your head that have played for both the Seahawks and the Steelers? Because there is a pretty lengthy pipeline.
Two real quick. Artie Burns and Devin Bush. So you're welcome, Seattle.
Yeah.
Back historically, I believe Franco went there to end his career, if I'm not mistaken. Nice. That's the only one jumping out to me, old school at the moment.
So, yeah, you're right. Franco did play for both there. Danny, of course, he played for Seattle in 1984 after 11 years in the black and gold. So he kind of got sent out to pasture there. Of course, recent players, Artie Burns and Devin Bush. I'm not sure there have been two more criticized and maligned first-round draft picks in Steelers' recent history than Artie Burns and Devin Bush, quite honestly, yeah. In terms of infamous players that really didn't live up to the potential. Of course, Devin Bush, we traded up to get him, try to fill that Shazier hole. One really good year, promising, then he had the knee injury and really fell downhill fast after that. And I don't think he's been getting a lot of meaningful snaps in Seattle. I think he's mostly been special teams guy for them. So I'm not sure how much action we're going to see from Devin Bush. I'm sure we might hear some things from Devin Bush leading up to the game this week. Godwin Igwebuke, guys, played with Seattle for a little bit in last year. So there's another common player there. Looking down the line here, do you guys remember Willie Williams? Willie Williams played for both the Seahawks.
Cornerback?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Yep. He played for the Steelers from 1993 to 2005. Not all at once, I'm guessing, but he played for the Seahawks from 97 to 2003. I didn't know Willie Williams was around the league for that long. Let's see here. Al Woods played for both teams for a short period. Of course, how could we forget Chad Brown, guys. The one Steelers game I went to at Three Rivers Stadium, I think Chad Brown had 4 sacks against the Bengals, which was like the franchise record at the time. So I always remember Chad Brown played well for both the Steelers and the Seahawks. Kirkland.
When I see what Micah Parsons does these days, it reminds me of a rich man's Chad Brown, if you will. Uh-oh. Just the ability to be great at either off-ball linebacker or edge is rare. And, I mean, Parsons is the ultimate of that. But Chad Brown was damn good back in his day, too, at both.
He was, Danny. And, you know, he kind of got overlooked in the time, your time of Kevin Greens and Greg Lloyd's, you know. Chad Brown was an exceptional player for the Steelers and the Seahawks. I just mentioned him. I don't know if you caught that, but of course, Levon Kirkland played for both. Let's see here. Who else are we?
Kirkland was probably about 300 pounds at that point.
Yeah.
a lot of randoms. Cresden Butler, remember him? He was a lot of hype from LJ Fort, BJ Finney, Terrence Garvin. Norm Johnson.
John L. Williams.
Norm Johnson, guys. Remember Norm Johnson? Yeah.
Yeah, kicker.
Cassius Marsh.
I do remember John L. Williams. Wasn't he a decent like pass catching back back in the day?
Yeah. Fullback.
He was a fullback, okay.
He was. I believe he started with Seattle too, if I'm not mistaken. And went to the Steelers later on in his career.
That makes sense.
You would be right. Yeah, he started in 86 and he wrapped up the Steelers in 95. I don't remember him very much for some reason. All right. Yeah, Norm Johnson. There's a name. Yeah, so we got a decent pipeline here between these two teams, but definitely looking forward to this matchup, guys. I do think they're kind of mirror images of each other in a lot of ways in the different conferences, the coaches, the overall record, performance. You know, it's going to be interesting matchup for sure. But Danny and I believe the Steelers come out with a win. B-Rye, just being as pessimistic, downtrodden self, does not believe in his team. Bad news all over the place, thinks the Steelers are going to get run over this weekend. But so if we win this game, right, the streak is intact, right? So the Steelers are playing for a lot. Steelers are playing for a lot to keep that streak of mediocrity 500 and above alive.
I think ultimately the bad news would be if we win, but you know, we need some entertainment.
Well, that's where we're all at. I think we're all looking, all starting to look ahead at the draft and the off season. I think we got a lot of content coming. I know B-Rye and I were talking, Danny, about wanting to kind of do a deeper dive into the off season process this year. Maybe having a nice solid show around free agency and a nice solid show around draft time, because there's such critical times for this team and exciting times now, I think, with the new management, with Khan coming in, kind of being more proactive, more money to spend, obviously, with your quarterbacks on a rookie contract. So we have a little bit more flexibility, and free agency and a draft, I think, are two critical times that we all get excited for that type of player movement. So I think we'll want to get together in the off season and talk a little bit of free agency targets and potentials and, of course, the draft. So
in another life, I was the Steelers GM for a while.
Yeah.
So this is right up my wheelhouse.
We all were. Yeah. I think we all come cut from that same cloth of loving the transactions and stuff. I always remember reading the Courier Express and always checking out the transaction column on the sports page. So
you used to create your own content too. I remember you used to trick me and create fake news.
Paul Gruber was a huge pickup. Yeah. I love creating fake news. I was doing it in fourth grade. Yeah, just testing your awareness there, B-Rye. Or I was trying to get a football card off you or something by saying Paul, probably trying to trade you a Paul Gruber card for probably like a Yancey Thig pen insert or something like that, thinking you would fight.
That's Hans's brother, right?
I think Paul Gruber was a lineman for the Buccaneers, and
yep.
I tried to tell B-Rod, I of course had his card, so I think that was the play. I told him, hey, the Steelers just signed this Paul Gruber guy. You want this card, obviously, probably for that anti-thig pen card you had or something like that. Or some pencils for the pencil cart. Remember the football pencils they used to sell in the pencil cart?
I don't know, and this was like early internet years. So like if you saw an internet, you obviously believed it. And you got this fourth grader here creating websites dedicated to fake news. It was just unreal.
There was no internet at this time for sure. We're still on floppy disks at the computer lab with the Oregon Trail at that. Internet.
I think we all would have called for that in fourth grade, right?
Yeah. Yep. All right, guys. Well, that is a summary of week 16 and a preview of week 17. Thanks so much for joining us, Doomsday. You passed with flying colors. You're welcome back anytime. Anytime you please. We love your perspective and your knowledge here that you give. And yeah, if you want to be our third wheel, you're more than welcome. We love having you on. I appreciate it, man.
Sounds great. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Happy holidays to you, sir. And bad news as always. Hope you have a nice rest of your holiday corridor here with the family. Hope you guys both enjoy the game this Sunday against the Seahawks. Don't forget, if you see Lenny out there, to give him shit about the Seahawks and how mid they are. Okay? And we're going to prove it this weekend. So for bad news, for Doomsday, is Mr. Just Right. This is The Stairway. See you next week. Here we go, Steelers. Peace.